Hi, I'm Terry.
And I'm Jay.
And you're listening to Pure Tosh, where we're talking to you about current events you may have heard of, events you may not have heard of, and other random topics of interest and our take on it.
Basically, we're talking pure shit for an hour, but it's, you know, quite relevant. It'll probably get your brain thinking, it'll probably make you think, and maybe you might have an opinion, which, you know, you could always email in, and if you've got certain topics you do want to talk about, then email in, let us know, and we probably might host it on further podcasts in the future. But in the news though, it's very interesting with Jake Paul.
What do you think about Jake Paul, Jay?
I can't get my head around how he's got so many followers. Like, I just can't. The guy's a dick.
He's followed by 12-year-old kids. 12-year-old kids.
Yeah, that's what I've sort of gathered, that he's, the majority of his followers are kids, but the majority of his content is wrong for kids. Like, heavily wrong, I think. It's, you know, I was trying to look to see, you know, because sometimes, like, YouTubers, they're, you know, they sort of, when they get big, then they go off the course and just end up becoming an absolute asshole.
Like, right.
But I was like, I think he was always a dick. I think his brother might have been all right at the start, Logan, but I'm not too sure. But he is like, how does anyone like him? Like, he must be a nightmare to be around. Like, an absolute nightmare. And I mean, it seems to work. He seems to make a lot of money.
He's making, how much was it? Like, 220 million a year. I mean, they say his net worth is 11 million, but I think I read something a while ago that he's raking in 220 million dollars a year. One or two, I know it's like a factor of 10 difference, but it's some ridiculous money for posting I don't even know what. But one thing I know that contributes to how he is if you see the people he surrounds himself with, like his groupies, all they do is, you know, they just massage the poor brother's ego. Yeah. Just massage it,
but
massage
they don't
it,
actually. They don't actually seem to be like his friend.
They're not. No, they're just groupies. There is like. Yeah.
It's weird. It's like
it's a weird relationship they got going on. It's a weird intimate.
Like.
Partnership they got going on.
I just can't work out why. I mean, how has he managed to get that many followers? But long story short, with Floyd, he ended up nicking his hat, which was all a promotional thing. Got your hat, apparently, to make money. So, yeah, and he got a black eye from that.
Black eye and a busted tooth?
Yeah. He tried to say it was the bodyguard, but there's like more angles of the video coming out, and I think it was definitely Floyd that hit him, or it looked like it. But it's so hard, like, trying to watch all the videos at the different angles and stuff, and it's all, like, chopped out, and...
Yeah,
they've made it good that you don't know the full story, like, and a lot of people are, like, saying, oh, it's all just a big sort of...
It's all put on,
kind of thing. Yeah,
premeditated.
And that's a new low for Floyd and stuff, but the weird thing is, he thinks he's so hard, and, you know, he fought that MMA fighter who was...
Ben Askren.
Yeah, who's...
Oh, Ben. you carried the weight in the hopes of people. You're going to redeem yourself after just humiliating yourself after going to the UFC.
I always thought he was rubbish anyway. Like, I didn't think he was that good of an MMA fighter. But long story short, he ended up fighting him. And I just don't get why he keeps fighting people that aren't like... I mean, Floyd's... Yeah, he's a good boxer, but he's been retired for quite a while.
He's retired, he's past his prime. But he's still... He still is in the gym every day, so...
Oh, I really hope he knocks him out, though.
Oh, 100%.
I hope... Well, he's not fighting Jake, he's fighting Logan, isn't he?
I know he's fighting Logan.
Which is a shame.
But Mike Tyson went on the Logan Paul podcast, Impulsive.
Yeah.
And as always, you know, Logan Paul's groupies were trying to force Mike, who at this point was shroomed off his mind. He's just there gobbling a load of shrooms. He's just there I don't know if he'd hidden by that point, but there was a point where he's just there, just munching mad amounts of shrooms, and they were asking him, you know, does our boy Logan have a chance in hell? And Mike's like, no, and there's one reason why, as that he works. He may be retired, but he is in the gym every single day. Whereas Logan sat there on a podcast, and he said that's the reason why Logan's going to lose. Taking aside all of, you know, the experience or the size difference, it's like the fact that Floyd's in the gym.
And I Logan's think the fight should be between Jake and Floyd, to be honest, and because I just really want him to get knocked down.
No, I want Jake to go into MMA. I want Jake to go into MMA because
then he can actually play by the actual. Because it is hard. I mean, you know, I've done kickboxing, and it is hard when you go into a boxing match after doing years and years of kickboxing, knowing that you can't kick someone in the face, you know, and you know you've almost got like muscle memory on how to fight, and I think it must be hard for these. I mean, obviously they've been training for ages to box, but still must be hard to not think I'm gonna jump knee you in the face and slam you down, put you in a grip hold, like, which is probably what I'd end up doing.
If it was a wrestling match, it would have gone one way, Ben Askren and Jake Paul. If it was an MMA match, I mean, Ben would have been stupid not to take it to the ground and turn it into a wrestling game.
Yeah, exactly.
And if it was, I think Jake and Logan actually had a history of wrestling.
Yeah.
But it was amateurs league, so they would have struggled big time.
Yeah, I think if Jake classes himself now as a professional boxer, which technically he is because he is sponsored, so I think he needs to actually start fighting proper boxers. Like, I think this whole fighting people that aren't boxers is just like stupid. And fair enough, yeah, Logan's fighting, you know, but he's an ex-boxer. Like, why not fight a current boxer? Now, Tommy Fury actually tweeted
called
that.
Him out, yeah.
Yeah, he said he was ready for it. But that was the thing.
Every boxer would be licking
and
their lips to do it.
No reply. No.
Of course.
And you know why? Because they know if Tommy got in the ring with him, boom, it'd be game over. Because he's an actual
pro
boxer.
Yeah, he's a pro. He's in prime of his age. He doesn't have the size disadvantage either.
No.
I mean, Logan's entire shtick is he's bigger than Floyd, so he'll bully him around. It's a lot riding on that size difference.
I think it's unfair. It's like, you know, if you could jump higher than someone, but they could run faster, you make a competition where it's only jumping and not running. That's sort of like how it is. You know, it's a bit, it is unfair, because I mean, what was it, like basketball, like before thingy, that MMA fighter?
Which one?
I can't remember. I just remember hearing it on the news.
There's a basketball player that became an MMA fighter. Or was it a boxer?
I don't know. I think it was a boxer. I think it was another boxer fight with him. And then he got knocked out.
Because it's the one that was fighting Tyson Fury, the guy. Because I think he came from a basketball background. Yeah. Don't quote me on this. What's his name? He's going to be upset that no one remembers his name anymore. Because he tried so hard to ride the undefeated thing. And then when he lost to Tyson Fury the second time, did you hear his excuses? Oh, my ring walkout, I was wearing a 20 kilogram cape and outfit.
Right.
So therefore, I was too tired. And therefore, I lost the fight. But also, my cornerman poisoned my water. What is his name?
Just forgotten
the
about.
Guy out of Alabama. Yeah, the guy out of Alabama, which...
Yeah.
It'll come back to me, but I forgot his name. But I know what you mean, so coming in from basketball into boxing. So I guess it does happen, but moving the goalpost like that, I don't think it'll work out in Logan Paul's favour. Because I remember you were telling me the other week that in certain fights, because you've had experience of this, size doesn't matter. You said you actually prefer fighting taller people.
Oh, 100%.
Than shorter people.
But, yeah, I mean, that is from kickboxing experience where... their legs are, well, your legs are the main source of fighting. You know, punching is probably 2 out of 5 moves, essentially, in kickboxing. So if you can get in past the point where they can actually spread their legs and you can still kick, it's huge advantage. And it's, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, that, you know, taller people are powerful, but they're also, you know, when you're a lot smaller than them, especially if they're doing an axe kick or something like that, you can get them on the shoulder and sort of flip them, and it is easier to take them down. It's, yeah, I used to hate fighting people smaller than me, and I think, you know, I think that was the sort of the trait in the sport, because the smaller ones could just get in, and then as they were coming out, they could kick you, and then as you went to kick, they would just storm back in, and, you know, tactical. But yeah, I much preferred fighting taller people because I just knew I could have them. But it's the skill on the fighter as well, I think, as well. Like,
I think when you put it like that, and you've got the skill, and yeah. Floyd's fighting style's never been to go like Mike Tyson against the bigger guys and really take it to the body, go really put pressure on the opponent.
Yeah.
Not that I'm an expert in Floyd's fighting style, but I think this would be really interesting, because if he goes up against Logan, maybe this is a time where he almost kind of lets loose on all of his disciplined fighting or strategy and just goes in and Mike Tyson's Logan Paul because of the size difference, so he has to play a pressure game.
And another thing with fighting, especially in the kickboxing tournaments, is it was very based on weight. So a taller person would be more lanky, whereas, you know, you've got this small person could have a lot of muscle in that, in the same weight, a lot more power, a lot harder. Like, and yeah, that sort of, that does add to it as well. But I don't know whether or not these fights are weight thing. I don't know, never really looked into it. Like,
what, boxing or?
Well, with these ones, with the whole Logan thing, are they?
Oh, no.
I don't think they are. No. I just think it's a whole load of shit, to be fair.
No, I think, like, Floyd Mayweather was, what, like 5'8", 5'9", lean, Logan Paul, 6'2".
Yeah.
There's a huge... And his entire shtick is, I'm bigger than him, therefore I'm going to win.
Yeah.
But from what... I mean, from your experience, when you...
Bigger they are, the harder they fall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Would you like to see Logan Paul fall in that fight?
I hope so.
Yeah.
But it's not Logan. That's the thing. You know, I think they're doing this now with the Logan thing. But I don't want to. I'm not really arsed with Logan. I just want to see Jake Paul get absolutely battered by someone. I want him to actually get in a fight with a proper, like, at his prime boxer that will absolutely destroy him. But then it will. You know, it's not in his favor, because, Let's face it, he's just about trying to make as many millions as possible. And, you know, for him to do it, he needs to sort of keep winning. So he's got to pick fights that he can win.
Mm.
And I just don't think he's going to win any fight with any, you know, at their prime boxing person that's actually, like I said, Tommy Fury would have him easily, hands down.
I think anyone on the professional roster in his weight class with their experience in the belts...
Yeah,
I just sat on the sidelines, licking lips, meme poster.
You can pick just, all the different fighting other categories.
Just waiting for that payday.
Right, and then making them do the boxing. But I think, hands down, needs proper boxer, like, to show them up. I think eventually it will have to happen. Like, that's what people are screaming for. Like, and it'll probably be one of the biggest money earning things of his thing, and that'll probably make, like, set him up to retire. But same time, I just want to see him get absolutely nailed. Like,
well, I think that's a big thing for him, because that's where the pull's gonna come. So I don't want to give Jake Paul the benefit of the doubt that this is just some genius premeditated move rather than just a flip of the moment thing. But the way he is, he makes so many people in the combat community, and I guess just general public, hate him and want him to get knocked out, that then people who otherwise wouldn't pay for these fights to see two professional fighters, you know, fight, they just pay to see this kid get knocked out, and you know, he ends up winning from it. But I'm digging in deep to find positives with Jake Paul, because it's hard to find content or attitude or elements of his personality that are just
if anyone
good,
like,
you
if,
know?
If anyone's listening that actually likes him or has like maybe there's a video out there of him actually being a nice person.
Once, just one video.
Like or something, just point us in the direction of like how he I don't think he is. I just don't think he is.
Jake Paul's mom.
I think
you do you have a video of him when he was like a toddler or something? Just something to redeem the poor kid.
I think yeah. Like I said, I think you could find some good stuff on Logan, like of him being a good person. But I think you know, Jake is the little brat of the fucking family, like, you know. I mean, clearly he is. Like I went on his Instagram and holy, it's just like, oh my god. It's like, give it a rest, like, you know, and it's, yeah, the people that surround him, like I said, that you can tell they're not his friends.
No, like, they're his hype men.
So suck it, like, just,
yeah,
suck it up. Yes men, that's what they are.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, but you see that with quite a lot of YouTubers, like, the people that hang around with them are just like, you know, like, Mr. Beast, he's another one, YouTuber, that's like, but he actually does a lot of good stuff, like, you know, with charities and stuff like that with his money. But he still comes across.
He has the same flippant attitude of like, well, I've got millions and I'm there for awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, he still comes across as a bit of a dick, don't get me wrong. But
he's a young dude with plenty of cash, but he's not as much of a dick as Jake Paul.
But
how sad is this?
But he redeems himself. So I was watching this one where he goes into the store and he's like, I'm buying everything in this store. And it's just like, you're such a dick. And then right at the end, he's like, and I'm shipping it up and I'm giving it to charity. And it's just like, oh,
fair enough.
He's sort of done that, like, and stuff. But, like, what I'm saying is he's actually all right, I think, as a person. But his people that he surrounds himself are still, they come across as fake. Maybe it's just the camera. Maybe they're not as confident.
I think if your intuition is telling you that, then
they come across as fake as well, like just like as a fake friend when you like see the interaction and stuff, and it's just like the way he talks, it's like, you know, it's like, I bought you a house, and it's like, you know, I think that's the reason why he's your friend. You know, I think a lot of people are friends with him because he buys them stuff, and it's like sort of not really friends. Like, I think what would be the reality of it is if he ever lost everything,
how many would them stick around?
Exactly.
Will be there for him.
I don't reckon a lot of them people would be, you know, like, you know, I reckon they'd drop him faster. I think they're his money friends. They're friends with him because he's got money. That's it. And it's a sad reality.
I think that's tragic for two reasons. You know, you get to that stage and then you, because you already sometimes got to wonder who your real friends.
Yeah.
So things like, from what I've seen, personal tragedy, that's when you know who your real friends. When something really bad happens, you know, a lot of people sometimes, and fair enough for them, you know, screen themselves out, they can't deal with the situation. That's one of the events. To think that you then have to go through another ringer if you have financial success and you've got to re-question everyone that's close to you. Are they there because, you know,
the money's there.
They're there for me, or are they there for the money?
Yeah.
But then it also makes you think, because then it's so easy to shit on the people that are this, you know, plastic and say, well, I would never do that. I actually wonder if we're in the position, would we be able to do that? I'd like to think I would, but, and I don't think I've been put in that position where I've been, well, obviously not around a rich YouTuber, but been around a rich friend and just mooched off them and mooched off them and mooched off them. And then when things hit, you know, hit the fan.
Disappear.
I do have, well, there are one or two friends that are, I guess by virtue of family success in their career, that they've had that. And, well, I mean, we're still friends. I don't get or ask for any handouts. So that's probably a good sign. But
I think actually, I had a mate that was like pretty alright friends with, and he was like working in Tesco's and stuff, and yeah, he sort of went on this change and ended up doing this and going to the gym and being ripped and all this lot, and then like actually, you know, I didn't really sort of like I don't think we're like friends anymore. He'd like deleted me off Snapchat, which wasn't me, but I hadn't like done anything wrong. I just sort of took a, like, I couldn't really sort of make conversation. He was always, he became like all of a sudden popular and then found himself with friends, which obviously people move on, they find different friends, and obviously he's with the gym friends. And I am not a gym person, so I'm like rocking the dad bod. I mean, maybe I should go to the gym, but I'm not, basically fat, but not fat, but kind of fat. I'm not fat, but I'm not gym worthy. And he was surrounding himself by these lean people, and it's just like, sort of like, whoa, I'll take a step back. And then, yeah, and then we just didn't, we just sort of went our separate ways. Like, so, yeah, I sort of didn't like sort of jump on the bandwagon of his success. It actually sort of pushed me away, which is a shame because I thought he was a really nice guy. But I think as well, he sort of, as he stepped up, he got this sort of I'm better than you thing. And I think a few people have done that. Like,
I think in the fitness thing especially, yeah, because then
it's just like, oh god, like, yeah. And then, and then like when people like start ignoring him, he then starts like thinking, oh, they're just jealous, but we're not. You just sort of, you just look down on us, and people don't like that. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, some people, yeah.
It is what it is. But, yeah, so I haven't really sort of lapped on to anyone that's, like, successful. So I don't know. I don't know how to be a fake person like that. Like, so. But, yeah, I look at some of the UK YouTubers, and when they're around their friends, they're more genuine. But maybe it's just because the UK ones just don't make that much money. Like,
I wouldn't say that.
I mean, so some of them are. Yeah.
Some of them do super well. The ones that I've seen who are super successful in the UK. Have you heard of a YouTuber called Ali Abdal?
No.
Oh, so for any listeners, this is a big divergence away from, I think, a lot of the big American ones. So you've got your Jake Pauls, your Logan Pauls,
Mr. Beast.
Mr. Beast. There's this channel called Dude Perfect in the States that I love, that people are just doing trick shots, but they're racking up hundreds of millions of views. But then this guy in the UK, Ali Abdal, so he focused on helping people to pass a medical exam in the UK. And now his entire thing is productivity. So almost a world away. It's very work oriented.
Right.
And almost, by definition, the content he puts out, but also just the persona he puts out is very, it's very different. And then he asks different questions. I wouldn't even think to ask, are his friends his friends?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I think we pretty much covered that topic, haven't we? So, yeah. And the only other thing that's been in the news really is obviously the elections in the UK, and the big Labour defeat in Hartlepool, I think it's Hartlepool.
Yeah, you were telling me about this before. Yeah. That Labour have held a seat for 75 years.
Or, I think, or 1975. I can't remember.
1975 or 75 years. Either way, it's been a super long time.
Yeah.
And they finally lost it.
Which is sort of like the crumbling of this. You know, I mean, you know, this election is basically the worst one they've hit since World War II, which is, you know, very, yeah, it's very worrying for Labour. And he did do what's his name? Keir Starmer. See, don't even know his name. That's how unpopular he is. you know, he admitted that it's their fault and Labour can't seem to get sort of their direction or where they actually want to go. And the party is split because you've still got the quite extreme people that are Jeremy Corbyn loving, like hands down socialist, communist sort of people. Shouldn't really say communist because it isn't, but it sort of is.
more traditional school of socialism, but also really buying into philosophy, whereas almost, I think we were mentioning this the other week, that Keir Starmer is more middle ground, almost middle left rather than purist a very purist, like, socialist philosophy.
He looks like a Tory.
He looks like a Tory. He smells like a Tory. Talks like a Tory.
He looks like a Tory, but he's not. He's Labour. He's Labour leader. And I think that's, I don't know, it's off-putting. He's a fake Tory.
Well, because we mentioned this the other week. I actually like him, but then you called me out on it and you said the only reason why I like him is because he is basically a Tory in a...
Yeah.
In a Labour seat, to which I
do find it funny. Conceded. I do find it funny online that people use Tory as their insult. Like, you know, if they're having an argument with someone, it's like, oh, well, fuck off, you Tory. Like, I see, like, a lot of people getting, like, it's, like, used as, like, abusive, which I find hilarious. Like, especially when people on the far left aren't getting their way, which they do like to cry about it, but... It's like, yeah, the one person's probably listed to this now going, you're Tory, but we're actually not. Like, for one, it's not even our government. We're not even in that political thing. But, so Boris Johnson has basically, yeah, and I think he even went there and did a talk and saying that he's going to invest a load of money and create jobs and stuff like that in that area, which definitely needs... Like, looking at the place, like, and there was a nice big blow up Boris Johnson as well, which is kind of weird. I wonder how much that cost.
Like, oh, so when you say blow up Boris Johnson, do you mean a big balloon?
Big balloon thing.
Yeah. Or do you mean the more aggressive kind of blowing him up?
No.
The first one.
I've seen it on the news. I was fascinated. I was like, I wonder if that cost more than his wallpaper in his flat. Because that was another thing as well, wasn't it? His whole doing up his flat on... He said it wasn't taxpayers' money, but there's an investigation on it, isn't there? Like, but it's all come out. It was like 800 quid on wallpaper. Like,
I think it's a little surprise, though. We're seeing a lot of...
Man's got taste.
We're seeing so many ministers either side of the Labour-Tory divide claiming expenses up to 85k a year.
Yeah.
Personal reasons. I mean, that's more than
huge
proportions of the UK have to live on.
Yeah.
Just that, and they're just being able to claim that. So that's...
I think the reality of it is they shouldn't be allowed to claim it, and it just needs to stop. But like, who's gonna vote for that? Not being funny. If I was there, because we have MHKs over here. They're MPs, aren't they?
Yeah, members of Parliament's over there, members of the House of Keys on the Isle of Man.
Yeah, so we've got a different political system, but if I was an MP and someone said, you know, you could get all this done on the expenses of taxpayers' money, so would you do it? So morally, I'd probably give it a couple of years, then think, fuck it. Let's do it. We're all human, right?
Yeah.
Let's face it, right? It's the same with the whole, like, people, like, argue saying, like, he's giving loads of contracts to his mates and stuff like that. And it's like, I'm not going to lie, I think I'd probably do the same if I was in a position of power. And I think that's what it is. It's, you know, when people get into a position of power, it's sort of, you know, I think a lot of people say stuff that when they're not in power, say, oh, this is wrong. But when they get into power, they will probably do the same, like... Not gonna lie, I think a lot of people will never get that opportunity, and they can say it all they want. Oh, I'd never do this. I mean, you see it in all different sort of countries. As soon as they get into power,
then it just
they
corrupts
get hungry
them.
For it, and boom, they're yeah.
Well, that's the point I was making with, you know, what we were talking about before with the friends who are kissing up to Logan Paul and everything.
Yeah.
Most people can point fingers and say, I will never be that shallow a person. I will never be that fake.
Yeah.
But then...
In the opportunity,
I still think most people in general are not that fake. I think the majority of people are not that fake. But I think that a surprising number of people who would swear down that they would never be that kind of person, and they're put in that position, they would start to do questionable things. And it's the same thing with power, government.
Yeah, it is.
It's just human nature. But then, there should be guardrails almost around human nature. It's such as, for example, we're going to have people wanting to give these contracts to their mates, which is fine if their mates are the best people for the job. So let's have it as a really transparent process. Here's how good his mates are at the job. Here's their past record, their track record. And here's what the competition looks like.
Yeah, not just some company that started a week ago.
Yeah, exactly. I think that because that's the main fear. It's not that he's giving it to his mates, because everyone would do that. It's that he's giving it to his mates who just...
set up a company.
Don't do... yeah, can't get the job done. And
yeah.
And that's... and again, that's well, probably... actually, that's still human nature, though, isn't it? They get
the
job and
then just sub it out to someone that could have actually got the thing, and then you would have cut the middleman out of them making the profit off of that other person by subbing them out. You know what I mean? Like that PPE company, they just used another company, but that other company could have just gone straight to the government, but they lost it because obviously this person was a mate. It's very corrupt. Like, I mean, yeah, I don't know what to say about UK politics, but it's, yeah, and it's very weird as well because, you know, no one ever really talks about the Lib Dems anymore. Did he even exist? Is that still a party?
Not since they did that thing for tuition fees back in, what, over 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Although, I guess as a couple of people who were students 10 years ago or in high school, maybe that's why we've got a bit of bias towards that as to why we're not looking
at Lib Dems. I think it's very weird because, you know, when you look at them and you look at the American system, it seems to be, apart from the Green Party, that's, you know, tends not to get anywhere really. It's sort of and the ultra racist sort of UKIP
sort of BNP
skinheads, like
they're taking our jobs, but I don't want to do that job
sort of people. Where you tend to be left with two, and it's the same with like the US, which to me isn't, I don't feel is real democracy, right? Like having like only two choices in theory, because there's always going to be either conservative or it's going to be Labour, you know, with the majority of thing. Whereas like our system over here, there's quite a lot of independent, and then obviously when the chief minister and stuff builds his team, it's not based on party, it's actually based on who's actually better for the job. So you've got like, you know, a few MHKs that are in the position, but they're not actually related to any party. They're actually an independent. They've just gone and not on their own, if you know what I mean. Which I think you probably could do in the UK, but I think the problem is the voice then doesn't get out. It's more, you've got one bench that's conservative, one bench that's Labour, and yeah, it's got independent. People sit there and people...
I think the one of the key differences with the Isle of Man and the UK is the Isle of Man, you've got... well, there are two differences. One, it's smaller. So if you're... We're the size of not even a county in the UK.
And we're the size of a town in
the UK. We're the size of a town in the UK, and we've split it into several different constituencies. So each MHK is governing a very... the equivalent of a village, almost.
Yeah.
And once you have those few variables, you can do a much better job. You can have a much better relationship with people on a day-to-day basis.
Problems get sorted out better as well.
Problems can get solved a lot better because there are just fewer, just by order of numbers. So that's one of them. The other one is that the MHKs are distributed pretty evenly across the Isle of Man, whereas my impression from MPs in the UK is that you have a huge concentration of MPs around London, because you've got all the boroughs around London, and then you've got districts further away that are sparser, and therefore when everyone congregates to make a decision, everyone goes with the majority, but the majority is concentrated in and around London, and that's who gets the benefits in the UK.
Yeah, because I did say this to you ages ago, that it seems unfair that all the money just seems to be spent in London. And I was saying about, I think Switzerland having their political system where it's split into zones, and that the zones are all different taxes, so you can be in one region of Switzerland and you pay 7% tax, in one region you pay 12% tax, but in one region their police officers might get paid this much, in another region they might get paid this much, and they have these leaders, but so there'll be like 5-7 leaders, I don't really know off the top of my head, but they only have one person representing them to like the UN, so they'll have one person that's elected spokesperson. but speaking on the behalf of all of them. But actually all of them, all these top ones run it. And I was thinking, you know, this is what I said, if England was split up like that and you didn't have one leader, which was Boris Johnson, instead you had essentially, I don't know, five or more. So you got like Yorkshire and or like the north or
northwest and then southeast, southwest.
Exactly. And they wouldn't have this thing about every time I've gone over to UK, I've noticed, you know, you go on a nice train in London, you go to Yorkshire and you put on these old trains. And then I read up articles like, you know, of like the MPs saying, oh, we need new trains for the north. And then London going, well, we need new trains as well, so we'll buy new trains and you can have our old ones. But it's all right, we'll upgrade the engine for you. So you're basically getting hand-me-downs, is how I see it. And I just think if you had a person in power, if you had like sort of not just one person in power who lives in London, and obviously all the money's gonna go in London, but if you had like a range of powers all sort of head of the country as you know, for say, and maybe have a spokesperson when it comes to talking UN and the EU and stuff, but having this world power, I reckon the money would actually be split better, and maybe even control and tax in different areas might be actually worth a thing like they do in Switzerland, because maybe London obviously needs, you know, the minimum wage and all this lot, maybe that could be sorted out. And then obviously with sort of like nurses and stuff like that, you know, nurses, sort of the way I see it, the pay is rubbish anyway over there, but like if a nurse lives down south of England, they're not actually, you know, that wage is pretty poor. Or if they're living in an area where it's like high property prices and stuff, that region, you know, they're actually like not making that much money. But if they're living in a poorer area, they could maybe afford a house quite easily, and that wage probably on their living expenses is probably better. And I think maybe if the regions had control of their wages, because you look like Scotland has, I mean, yeah, because Scotland is pretty split, and you know, their police officers are the highest paid, like that sort of, you know, maybe if England was a bit more split up and controlled, and you know, maybe taxes would better. So maybe stuff like that's quite far away from, like if like businesses have like problems with transport or something like that, and like jobs needed in this town but it can't because of the thing, maybe tax could be lowered on certain things to sort of balance it out.
Right, because I guess to give context to any listeners, they're outside the UK. The further you move outside of London, it's kind of the same with any country really, isn't it? The cheaper, but by huge orders of magnitude, accommodation gets. But it's still, across the board with everything else, as you can imagine, pretty much the same price. And the quality of living varies, because you can say that it dips when you go into central London on the same wage, but then it can go up quite a bit. I was not a voter for Brexit, but I'm an optimist for it. And I wonder, now that that's actually happened, I think there'll obviously be the same whole power struggles and power dynamics and the same whole arguments. But if we can start inching further towards, okay, so we're not using London as a financial hub and the crux, we now need to diversify a bit more.
Yeah.
And as soon as we start doing that, where we don't need to concentrate everyone into the city or Canary Wharf, suddenly location becomes less significant. If you're working a tech job and you've got a good laptop connected to the internet, you can do that remotely. You can do it from Yorkshire and Humber, or you can do it from Cornwall or wherever. You don't need to be in London to do that.
Yeah.
I think that's where opportunity
Could
come in for that.
And I think the problem is, like I said, with the old MPs, is there's not enough from them areas to have a say that makes actually a difference, you know, when they're basically begging for more funds. Apart from obviously, you know, you see like Hartlepool's lost out and now Boris has gone there and he's like, yeah, I'll put in the money. But would he have put in the money if Labour had won? Probably not. And would that voice from whichever Labour leader it was, would that have a significant sort of, would that have an effect? Would that, you know, would they manage? Probably not. So in the best way, it's probably good that the town went Tory, but at the same time, you know, it shouldn't really be like that. I think, like I said, you know, you're still voting either on one or the other. Like I said, they've been Labour for so many years, and that's why it's fallen. But yeah, Labour's gone through a hard time over the past, 10 years. I think since the crash, I think.
It has, and which is surprising, because normally in British politics, same as US politics, you flip-flop between parties.
Yeah.
It's almost,
it doesn't seem to be flipping back, does it?
That's the thing. So, and that's why Hartlepool is so significant, because it's showing a continued trend of, despite our Tory government not doing the greatest job, they've got some wins, so our vaccine rollout has been great.
Yeah.
Our response may not have been the best in other ways, but we've got some wins and some not so big wins, and yet, despite the losses, the Tories seem to keep getting re-elected.
Yeah, and another thing as well, what I do think that Labour messes up on, and is when they say, we want free this, free that. I sort of, knowing from the crash and stuff, the financial crash and being at school and, you know, everything just sort of collapsed when I was a lot younger, I come to the realisation that things aren't free. And I don't get why people still class it as free. And I think that's sort of, I think you need to put a price on things. I think you can't just have it as free. And I think a lot of things would be better. Like the NHS, people are like, it's free. It's like, it's not free at all. You look at your payslip, like, that NI, that national insurance, is for the NHS.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're paying. So when it's underfunded and needed more funds, there's only one way to get more funds, and that's for that NI on your payslip to go up and more money. And I think if people realise, oh, it's not free, I'm actually paying for this, and then it's underfunded, and then just go, well, I'll be happy to pay at least £1 more a week or something like that, and then you've got millions of people happy for it, paid more, that sort of. But because people think it's free, they don't they realise, like, you know, if they went into the NHS for something, and let's say it was petty, like they got drunk and stuff, because that's another theory as well, like the Americans, they have to pay for everything, like, so they don't tend to have a problem of them getting absolutely mauled and getting picked up by an ambulance, because they don't want that £500 ambulance bill, and they don't want the £5,000 to stay in the room.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Imagine if it was, like, if it still was free, but at the end of your visit, you got a little slip that said how much you've just cost them. Like,
so you're not being charged for it, but you've got the awareness that
of how much
this isn't free.
Yes.
You've deprived our NHS of,
I think it would make a big difference, because you've got a lot of people that go, oh, wasting our, you know, they look at smokers, which obviously, you know, we covered that last
time. We touched
time.
That last week, yeah.
Yeah, with the whole thing, but like, you know, people look at people going, oh, my, you know, oh, you're wasting our NHS, it's my NHS sort of thing. Like they've put in enough money, you know.
To call it theirs.
Yeah, yeah. Or when people are on the sick and they go, oh, well, you know, I've worked for years, I've paid for it, but have you actually paid for it? Have you actually put that much money in to cover the cost of you being in hospital? Like, I think people have got I think if people put a value on things, I think it would shock them and sort of probably urge them actually to sort the NHS out, I think, as well. Like, I think with it being underfunded, people are like, why is it underfunded? Like, and they're not realizing the link that realistically we need to pay more to sort of boost it and put more funds into it.
But I think raising awareness like that is, because that could be a really good way to reduce costs.
Yeah.
I think British people in general are really supportive of helping out the NHS. So, for example, the NHS clapping period, what was it, last
which doesn't
last
pay April, the bills, by the way.
It doesn't pay the bills.
My girlfriend's a nurse. So. But you know, the clerks don't pay the bills.
Yeah, they can cover over if you don't want to give them a pay rise, though. If you want to cover over actually skipping a pay rise, then...
It adds to the headache of them leaving a 14-hour shift. I mean, it was nice. I mean, yeah.
But the takeaway from that is, okay, the government might be stingy. They probably should have given a pay bump instead of claps. But the people that turn out every single day to clap, there is a level of responsibility in the UK. And then I think having the awareness of, oh, wow, this costs literally X amount could reduce it. There is the further challenge, though, of does the NHS know how much it costs? As in, individually, doctors, nurses, etc., could have a good idea, but do the executive leaders have a good handle on costs and budgets?
Yeah.
Because I fear that that's another endemic problem in a lot of government services, is that once you're given, if I tell you go out next week and spend £200 million, it's so hard to do it so incisively that you make sure every penny spent efficiently. Yeah. So you can empathise, but for people whose entire job it is to do that, there are a lot of people in those positions that don't look to efficiently spend that money. So I bet that if you go and ask them, how much of that one hospital visit in Hartlepool on the 26th of April at 9 p.m. for this person cost?
Yeah.
They'll say, we don't have access to that data. We genuinely don't know. Here's our best guess.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, like paracetamol is dirt cheap in the shops. It's like, I don't know, 74p or something like that, 75p.
For a packet of paracetamol?
Yeah, even cheaper sometimes. Or it was before Corona. And then, like, I swear you could get it for, like, 25p, but that's long gone now for some reason. I don't know why. I just can't find it in there for 25p anymore. That's gone. So 2019, that 25p thing. But I was told that, if you went to A&E and they had to prescribe you it from their pharmacies, like, a packet actually ends up costing about £9. Like, and I think, if you managed to get that slip, if you knew what you were paying when you were going in there, a little bit, paracetamol, £9. Like, I can buy it from the shop for £1. It might make you think, and then the next time you ever went in there and they were like, yeah, we're going to give you a paracetamol, just go, oh, it's all right, I'll go to the shop and get some. Like, save you money.
I just imagine someone just... broken leg or whatever, here's some Miss paracetamol. I was like, let me hobble to the shop for you. Don't you worry about it.
Yeah, because I give blood as well. And the whole reason I give blood was because I heard that, we were in the Isle of Man, but to buy it from across was costing like £175 if they needed blood. And there's plenty of people that can give blood over here. Mm-hmm. It's just people aren't signed up for it. And it's just like, it's ridiculous. Like, we could save loads of money by just signing up. And I highly recommend anyone listening, just if you can, give blood. It's only a litre every 3 months, depending on your blood type. I mean, I've got super rare, so hardly didn't ever need it. Like, it seems to be. Like, I think I go every 6 months or something. I think I went twice last year. But obviously, coronavirus is sort of, stop that, like, sort of thing. But
of course.
Sometimes they sort of ring me up and they're urgent, which is, and then you're in there on the Sunday, but they haven't really called me that much. When I signed up, I thought I'd be doing it like every couple of months, and it turned out I'm not. But
maybe that's a good sign.
Is a good sign. And maybe they are getting enough blood and they're sort of rotating, but it was just the fact that hearing how much it costs to get it from the UK, and it's just like, that can be completely unavoidable. And I think that education as well needs to be, that message needs to be spread so people can sort of donate to a local hospital, your blood. Maybe it's, if you ever need blood, maybe it might be your blood that's coming back in. Don't know.
That's all right.
Which is pretty good in a sense, but I think people definitely need it. I think the whole free this, and I think that's why Jeremy Corbyn lost when he said he wanted to give free Wi-Fi to everyone.
Like, I mean, that's a winner for me. If it makes any sense economically, at all,
I mean, a load of people were like, yeah, free Wi-Fi, and then they were like, hang on a minute, nothing's ever free. And I think that's what people have realised.
People are talking onto it.
So, you know, there was a guy here who wanted, like, the buses to be free. I mean, I'm a tradesman, and I know a lot of tradesmen who would never get the bus. I can't get the bus with my lawnmower to go to work. So if it was free, am I paying for that? Do then, like, you know, my tax keeps going up every year on the van. Should I get a lower tax, seeing as I can't get the bus? I always see it a bit unfair, having it free. I mean, I wouldn't mind paying if it's young people under 25s, and if it's people over 60, I could sort of see, you know, I'd probably want it to be free for them. But for everyone, especially people that are, like, on a lot more money for me going to an office, why it should be free, for them. Like,
that could actually be why the Wi-Fi thing kicked as well. So first, people are realising, well, it's not free. Someone's paying for it.
Yeah.
And then second, I think the people who realise that in a big way are the people who it doesn't benefit. So when Labour's saying that, they're obviously, it's so transparent what they're doing. They're pandering to millennials. It's what they're doing. They're pandering to millennials. What do millennials like? They like Instagram. And they like TikTok. They must need Wi-Fi for these things. So we'll give them Wi-Fi. But an older generation, so for example, people who are staying back at the family's home, they don't really use it.
Yeah.
So, and they would be taxed for it if they were based in the UK. So under the Labour scheme, they'd be taxed for a service that they don't want or they don't use.
Yeah.
And they would probably be the first to deduce that and be like, well, are we just being shut out here? Are we just being totally shit on? Right,
but
you.
But this is always what I want to know is at the end of the day, it's not free. So who's paying for it? Are we all paying for it? Or are our kids paying for it down the line? Like, because it's either that or it's our future generation that will pay for that. And it's like, do you want your kids, your grandkids paying for you having free Wi-Fi? Like, I don't think so.
Well, that's a whole other kettle of fish, because if you look at what we've done with this coronavirus pandemic, so we've seen ourselves borrow huge amounts of money to pay for furlough, you know, stimulus checks and everything. Throw huge amounts of money away on PPE sometimes, but
we're not
collectively checking. We spend a big amount, and this would be fine if everyone around the world agrees, look, we're all going to be raising the amount of debt for future generations, so, you know, we're kind of saddling our kids with it. But if everyone's doing it across the world equally, then it's kind of okay. Not really, but kind of okay.
Yeah.
But there's a huge imbalance. So the US is heading towards, so in terms of measuring the state of how an economy's moving and breathing, you measure their gross domestic product, how much they're producing each year. And normally you want to keep debt to less than half of that.
Yeah.
But since the pandemic, it's risen to nearly the exact same amount. Which is fine if that was the same across the board. If everyone in the world had their GDP to debt ratio approaching one, then that's fine. However, you're seeing the more fiscally responsible countries, so you've got China, for example, they're still keeping it around 0.4. They're keeping it a healthy level, and we're massively over leveraging ourselves with debt. So whether it's, and it's still likely to be us that pays for it, but definitely future generations, where you give away this much global leverage in the debt markets.
It will be, you know what, like, you could just imagine in 100 years them saying, oh, we've finally paid off what was spent in the coronavirus times. Like, it'll definitely be generations that are paying off all of this debt. I mean, it is ridiculous, isn't it, the amount. But
because I think that's the thing, with borrowing money, you're unlocking the opportunity to just hand away today's problems to either future you or future you's kids.
Yeah,
which is shocking. And it begs the question, how many more governments have done that in the past?
Oh, yeah, when you think about it.
Which are just kind of, so we had that with climate change, right? So that was people not really caring or being, you know, paying much due diligence to disposal or energy production. So people in the industrial era being like,
Yeah.
We don't need to worry about this. This is something we don't need to... We probably can calculate. We've got the mathematical talent to do so, but, you know, future generations problem. Now we're dealing with it.
Yeah.
Wonder what else is being swept under the rug and is going to come out.
Oh, I think there's loads of stuff. Yeah. I think there's even stuff from the 50s that, like, we are still paying for. I think the US is definitely still paying for stuff from the 50s. Like, the space age and stuff like that. They spent loads of money. Like,
you mentioned one thing to me yesterday that actually I think we're going to soon start paying for in a big way, which is chemicals on food.
Yes.
You're saying chemicals in terms of growing food.
Yes, yes. That is a big problem, especially in my area out of expertise. The fact is that soil has been destroyed for, yeah, since the late 50s, chemical companies have grown, and they are massive. Like, and you got ones like Bayer, which are one of the biggest, but they're also pharmaceuticals. They are billion pound companies, and they're holding so much power and so much things, so it's hard to actually do research on certain stuff, because a lot of stuff's hidden and it's sort of bought off, and it's a very, very corrupt thing. But the proof is out there, and if you search hard enough, yeah, I think that's a whole topic on its own, is how we've lost so much topsoil, especially with the you know, oh, I can't even say it. Yeah, turning it into desert. What do you mean? Basically, unusable land.
I see.
Nothing will grow.
Almost decaying the value of the soil. Because yeah. I was actually coming at it from the whole, if humans are consuming those chemicals, then the number of health problems that must be causing in the future, which goes back to burdens on the NHS.
Yeah.
That if you really narrow down to the root cause analysis, there's probably not so much that we're doing day to day that's causing those problems, but maybe the stuff we're putting on our food, you know, or the cleaning detergent that is being used around the house that might get ingested as well, and how that impacts yourself from the inside out. But you're also talking about not just from a human perspective, but also the actual land itself.
Yeah.
And I remember you telling me that it impacted, has far wider impacts than just food, because it also impacts
water
as well, yeah,
which is vital. We've got some big problems coming up, 100%. Like they did this whole thing. I remember reading this article years ago about sweet corn from 1965 and sweet corn from 1997. And the sweet corn from 1997 was bigger, but its nutritional value is basically next to none.
Really?
Because the chemicals that they were putting on were only like free chemicals, which was getting them grown. And these farmers in the US, they're sixth generation corn farmer. That, you know, that means they're like the sixth generation of people that have just planted corn in their fields. That's all they do. And it's just monocropping the hell out of the soil. And, you know, it's come to that point where it is sort of like the reality of it is in soil, there's probably over 70 different types of minerals and certain types of soil, maybe even more. And over time, slowly zapped away, the chemicals are killing the microorganisms in the soil, and it's just sort of disappearing. And then it's like heroin, that these chemicals for soil, like, it just, the plants need that fix, so then they're just completely reliant on getting fed everything, which is great for the chemical companies. They love it. Fertilizing companies, they love it. They love putting it on. And they have done this thing of making organic farming this whole big, like, oh, it's so hard to do. It actually isn't. When you look at the science, it's actually very easy. And I think it's actually scary how easy it is, but how misleading all the information is about it. I mean, I could get nettles and brown sugar, put it in a jar, and make a super concentrated fertilizer with at least 12 different types of minerals that I can think of on my head, vitamin K and all this lot. Very powerful, full of iron. Obviously, different feeds that you create, you've got to do it for certain plants. So obviously, nettles isn't a good one for tomatoes and potatoes because they don't really like high iron, for example. But what I'm saying is, to make that high concentration for other plants, very easy, or even for grass, for your lawn. Like, it's very, very easy to make. And that jar, if you fermented it in that way, it's like, I think it's like 500 to 1, which is very concentrated. And yeah, it would last a very long time. And the chemical companies don't want you to know that because, like,
you got to keep buying these chemicals that are conditioning the land to need their chemicals.
Yeah.
And
basically, what I could make in a little jam jar that's cost me probably about a bag of brown sugar.
Yeah, a few pennies.
And a couple of hours foraging for the right weeds, because weeds are brilliant for fertilizers. I'd say, like, if you added my time, it would cost me, I don't know, 25, 30 quid. But when you look it up of how much fertilizer that would make and then how much that would cost to buy a synthetic version from a company, you're talking, you know, could make about 200 quid's worth of fertilizer that you'd probably need. Like, and that's the sort of scale that you sort of got to think about. And, you know, you're taking that money away from them and they're not going to like that. And that's why I think they've pushed it out there that this whole organic farming is so hard. And it's not, go on YouTube, there's loads of organic farmers and stuff doing it. Like, and I think, yeah, things are definitely changing now. You look at farmers in the US as well. Like, these organic farmers are working not only on small land.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got like a corn farmer that's got 7,000 acres and is making millions, but they've also got big, massive tractors and they're also spending 120 grand on chemicals and stuff. And then you've got these farmers that are making 100 grand off of 2 acres of intense farming. They don't need a tractor. They don't need all this pricey thing. They don't need chemical fertilizers because it's all there. They're composting, they're mulching on top. They've got all this different ways of doing it. They're not just growing one crop, they're growing multiple crops. And yeah, it is more, when you think about it, you could say more labour intensive, but in reality it's not when you look at it. And basically they're like probably about 80% more efficient of the land than what these traditional farmers are. And you're starting to see it now, this whole, and you got to think, why hasn't farming just, you know, gone back to this? And the reality of it is, these companies with the big tractors and stuff are pushing to hide the fact that this isn't a good idea, because it's not a good idea for them. Because basically, if all the farmers were like this, so intense on these little farms, producing so much food in such a small area, and they don't need tractors and they don't need chemicals, well, that's like the tractor companies out of business, and that's like the chemical companies out of business. And then if they don't make they're basically, they are trying to protect their profits, and this is what they're pumping out. And that's why they're so, like, so much stuff is so misleading, and you've just got to fight your way through it. And luckily enough, I think now, with especially social media and stuff,
I was about to say that,
it's, you know, you really sort of getting this information out. Like, you'll see a paper, but that would say the truth. And I do still use weed killer and stuff like that, and a lot of people say, oh, it's banned and it's bad. And there is the two extremes of, like, one person saying it's, like, really bad and the other person saying it's not. And the reality of it is how I say it, is like the weed killer that we use is as bad as eating 200 tons of potatoes. And what you think about that is, basically, if you ate 200 tons of potatoes, well, if you could eat 200 tons of potatoes, you'd get cancer. Like, the radiation in the potatoes. Yeah, that level of potatoes, you'd get cancer. You'd never eat 200 potatoes, though, 200 tons. And when you think about weed killer, me as a gardener spraying a path or spraying a thing, it ain't that bad. But the reality of it is, you know, you have these ones cropping up that they've got cancer and they've sued Roundup and they've got these £1 million payout. The reality of it is, they're in a tractor spraying 20,000 litres of the stuff a week. A ridiculous amount, because the farms are so big and so reliant on this. I mean, they even have crops that are, you know, resistant to things. So they're going over all their crops all the time. But what they don't realise is they're in a tractor, and even if it's a dry day, I mean, I'm spraying with a backpack sprayer on a dry day with no wind. That ain't going up into my nasal system. It's going straight down where I pointed the nozzle. Whereas this tractor, it's creating its own air force, which sort of vortexes around the tractor. So essentially you're breathing it in, unless you have filters. I don't know if tractors have filters, I've not really looked into it. But my guess is that the reason they have got cancer is because they've been basically breathing it in.
So it's huge amounts of radiation.
Huge amounts, months and months. Like, well, it's not radiation, but like sort of chemical, which is, you know, like wine is good for you. A glass of wine is good for you. Too much of it isn't, and too much of anything will give you cancer, because it's just not normal and it's not right, and then your cell, and so, you know, cancer does change cells. So yeah, so it's like too much of the sun, like, will, you know, kill you, it'll give you skin cancer. But you still need a little bit of it. It's good for you because you need the vitamin D, like, and stuff. So, you know, water could probably kill you if you drank enough of it.
So just going back to what you're saying before, just so I've got it clear, and just so it might
we've clear. Rambled well, on here.
No, not at all. Like, so
I mean, that's why we call the podcast Pure Shit, or podcast. Yeah,
same. It's basically same thing, is. Almost. But just, I guess, for understanding, so you were saying the radiation from 200 tons of potatoes is the same as. So you're talking about the effect of ingesting the chemicals rather than radiation from the chemicals.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That was what I was.
That's
what I'm trying to get in my head.
So what would cause the cancer with the thing is well, anything grown in the ground, carrots or anything like that, it's got a higher radiation level, which is sort of what sort of make, and they, you know, when scientists realised this, that's when they did a study, and that's when they came up with the fact that actually you'd have to eat 200 tons of potatoes to actually affect your body
in the same way,
and, you know, essentially, if you wanted, you know, if you went out to Chernobyl, you could only spend so long in that area before you got it. You know, basically, you'd have to, or even, yeah. So, yeah, when you think about it like that, potatoes are pretty harmless. Like, but I don't know, maybe if you potentially turn the potatoes into a liquid and sprayed it constantly around you, maybe that might kill you.
Just baiting a huge batch of potatoes.
Which, I don't know, you know, it is what it is. But that is one to talk about at a later day, probably, if people wanna hear about that. Because there's a lot, I think the media is full of misleading information, isn't it, when you think about it?
A lot of businesses are built on information disparity. So you've got finance is a big one for it. You've got news that comes out 1 second. The person who has the quickest access to that news takes all the profits.
Yeah.
That's why you've got all these huge hedge funds who are bragging about, but also spending hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, on just slightly better fiber optic or glass wires, they can conduct the electricity a little bit better, just a few milliseconds better, so they get the information a tiny bit quicker, because that makes all the difference when you're high frequency trading or using that information. So finance is one area. I've no doubt that in an area where there's a concentration of big monopolies, they have to build a moat around themselves and keep other people out, and one of the easier ways to do it rather than rather than to build something of quality all the time is
just to mislead people.
Spread information that bigs you up and pushes other people out.
Yeah. Because I do see this. I see a lot of people, like, especially like the anti-vaxxers and stuff, and they're pumping out this information, and it's like, proof, please. Have you got evidence? Have you actually got the scientific data? And they'll just post a link of this random sort of website that still isn't evidence. Like, it's just an article. It's just someone's wrote it. Like, I could make a website, and I could write, I don't know, 5G has been tested in a certain area, and 20 people have died in a week. There's no evidence of that. I've just done it on our website. And then someone else will see it, copy it, paste it. I think someone did that, didn't they? They did that little thing where they got this like microchip and said something on the microchip or something. They made fake news to show how bad fake news is getting around social media. And it got around, and it even got on like CNN or whatever news channel in America, which is hilarious. And I think this guy did a documentary on it, actually, of him basically proving how toxic fake news is and how people just use it for their, you know, personal gain, and there's like no evidence of it, and it was just basically just, you know, he did it for a laugh, and it went absolutely viral, and it was nuts. I can never remember his name, but it was like a 5G stunt, and that still goes around today. There's still people saying about his like thing, and because they think it's real. And
wow, it's, I guess, because if you just from the number of people who are on the internet, you have 100 people, 99 people will see through it and will see it's total bullshit, and it only takes that one person to believe it.
Yeah.
And you multiply that up by the number of people who are on the internet,
it's crazy.
That's a lot of people, and then that person spreads the same message, and it's the same breakdown.
But it's easier for them to connect with each other, so then they can feed off each other. So like, these people that believe all these lies and these things are then joining a group of other people that think exactly the same way. And then they're like massive, and I think sometimes they overpower people. And I think sometimes if you tell a lie so much, I think it just eventually becomes,
it embeds itself in the people that just keep being exposed to it.
You know, you've seen that like in history of lies that have been said to people, and eventually it's just in their head is true. Like, I think that was a powerful thing, especially in World War II with the propaganda with the Nazis, but we're sort of dragging on here. But, you know, people believed that they believed like they were this Aryan race thing. But, you know, the reality of it, there was no proof. I mean, you look at the Olympics, there was still, even back then, there was still, you know, people of other ethnicities winning the Olympics. So if this was a perfect race, they'd be winning them all, wouldn't they? But they didn't. But yet they're being told this on the radio, and it was, you know, it was probably the first light of powerful fake news. I think they created it, because they did, and they spit it out on the radio with this whole, they were the first ones to do it. And I think it's never sort of, this fake news has never really stopped, has it?
No, it hasn't.
If anything, especially over the few years, it's worse. Like, but we're dragging on now, so we've gone way past the hour, which is just sort of what happens. Like, so we hope you've listened to this, and if you've got any questions or anything,
any topics you want to jump in on, let us know.
Any things you want us to rant about or go on about or basically talk pure shit on, then we'll put the email in the link, and hopefully this will be uploaded on time and gone out to the right things. We had problems with the last one, only just fixed it, so hopefully this one will come out and be better. And if you are enjoying it, subscribe, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. If you don't like it, you don't need to rate it, don't worry about it.
Definitely let us know as well, and but, engage with us in the comments.
Yeah, we love it. Like, even if you're against one of our views, it's nice to get another opinion. I think someone outside of a box looking in sometimes is beneficial. So if you don't like it and you do get angry, send us an email. We'll read it and take note. Like,
cry in our sleeps about it.
Might not agree with it, but who cares? Like, if we're all the same, we're all robots. So, yeah, hopefully we'll catch you next week. And thanks for listening.